I don't know what you should do, Mike.
I think I'd rather take a bullet in the head.
I'd rather stick needles in my eyes.
I don't know what to say. Felger
and Mass. The Beyond Dumb 2 to 6 show, yeah. Right?
Jackpot!
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gender Free Friday is brought to you by Neshoba Valley Ski Area in Westford. Why drive, Mass, when you can ski, ride, or tube so close to home? Visit skineshoba.com. Go right back to the phones. Are you ready for that?
Yeah, where's Gasparita? Is he coming?
He's late all the time.
I don't know. I don't know if he's coming. I don't know.
Here's Matt in Wakefield.
He should be coming. He's just tardy.
If he's here, he's here. If he's not, he's not. Matt in Wakefield. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, guys. First time, long time. How you doing?
Good.
Happy Friday. Hey, listen, I was wondering if you could just touch base a little bit on Gostkowski's future. We haven't really talked about him too much. And I know Baz, I think back in like week three, you were pretty brutal on him. So I'll let you guys talk on that. And thanks. Have a good weekend, guys.
Okay, babe. How were you brutal on him?
I don't think I was. Actually, I thought by the end of the season, he was kicking the ball as well as he has in a long time. Now, he didn't have a good Super Bowl. No two ways about that. But they had other issues in that game that were more important.
Another extra point. That one was brutal. That was so bad. It wasn't his usual slice. Yeah, this thing was left and stayed left.
About 10 yards left to the left upright.
He missed the net.
Yeah, it wasn't even close.
He didn't hit the net. So, like, I'm done talking about it. I keep saying they should bring in competition. They should bring in someone to push him. And he goes, well, you'll never find anyone better, so why do it? All right, fine. Just miss an extra point every big game. You're done. Fine. No problem. I'll stop talking about it. I won't try and bring in competition. Every time I mention that, a Patriots writer is like, well, I can't find anybody better than that. Why would you need to do that? It feels fine. Bring in no one. Keep the guy for the rest of his life to miss an extra point in every big game that you play. Done. Not going to talk about it anymore. You know what I mean? It's like, well, we have to accept it because you can't find anyone better. Lord knows, you can't find anyone on the street to come in and shank extra points in championship games.
No, I think we have to accept it because all of these kickers collectively have lost their minds since they changed this stupid rule. What used to be a gimme, they're now freaked the hell out about.
Kicker for life. I don't care how many extra points he misses.
I'll tell you, they both had problems in the game. And I actually spent time watching Elliott in the pregame. He was inconsistent. He was all over the place. So I sort of felt like that one was coming. And then Collinsworth said something during the game about the logo on the field. Did you hear about
that? Yeah. It was bothering the kickers.
So I guess the logo was slick or something. I don't know if
that's Murray's point. These soft-minded ninnies. Would you kick the ball?
They've all lost their minds.
Oh, my God. There's a little paint on the field or what? Would you shut up and kick the ball?
I mean, to me, it was... Elliott was bad. I was watching him in the pregame. He was in... One kick was really sort of short and offline, and the other ones were deep and good and long. Like, he was all over the place.
Here's Craig in Tingsboro on the Bruins. Go ahead, Craig.
Hey, guys. Two quick things on the Bruins. I wanted to say I'd give Chara 3 for 12 if he would take it and let him know that that third year he might not be on the top line. And even though our defense is definitely not as good now as it was in 2011, I think our offense is much better than it was in 2011, and that will make up for it and give us a good playoff run. So thanks for taking the call. I'll hang up and listen.
I do not think you're better than the Cup team. I don't. At this time, you might be, you know, if you get all these kids in their prime, you might ultimately be, but I don't think you're better than that team, but you don't have to be. That's not how hockey doesn't work that way. I mean, you can still, with good goaltending and good effort and good luck, you can still win. So, like, the question is this team good enough to win it all?
No, I don't think they're there yet.
I don't either. I don't think it's their time, but I'll take it. They, you know, if you play this well in the regular season and establish this level, you better win something in the postseason. So they should, you know, my expectation for them is to win a round, and then we'll see.
Yeah, if I were Bruins fans at this stage, here's what I would say, in all seriousness. Enjoy it. Okay? It's gravy right now.
It came a year early.
Yes, it's gravy right now. In the playoffs, you have every right to expect at least one round. You know, and I mean winning a round. And then after that, we'll see what happens. Don't get stupid over this. Okay, it's a regular season run. It's still a regular season run. Everything will change come April. Everything.
Here's Hampton in Worcester. Go ahead, Hampton, on Tom Brady. What do you got?
Hey, guys. Just wanted to put it out there. You know, I think everyone thinks that Tom Brady is, you know, always taking less money to help the franchise go and get players, but I don't really think that's what it was. I think he did that to make sure that the backup QB market would never be anything that would compete with his position. And then now it's funny that after they lose the Super Bowl and Garoppolo is gone, stories and rumors come out about him wanting more money, right? I just think that that's too much of a coincidence, and that I think he negotiated that those low salaries to make sure he didn't have anyone coming in by the QB market competing with him.
Okay, Hampton, thanks for the call. You know, I think as just a show of solidarity to Borgie, we should just let, because this is our second call now, where people don't realize that the story was a fake. Like I say, yeah, you know, there's rumors out there. The guy called before. He said the paper said today that Tom Brady's demanding more money.
Yeah, Felge, it was me. I called Borges and told him I was done. Yeah.
I say we don't correct these people and just let them, like, we'll just go on with the separate fake storyline because it's actually a better story that way.
Parallel universe?
No question.
Oh, I like the idea.
I mean, I was rooting for Ron, man. It's a good story. Again, I tell you, I got all underlined ready to go. And I was pissed that it was fake. And I'm pissed the Herald confirmed that it's fake. I'd like to go forward with this thing. This was classic Borges. It had it all. I know more than you. I was right about other things. Let me tell you what happened, and you've got no clue. Yeah, it's perfect. It was well written. It was insightful. I learned something. I don't care that it's fake. I want it to be real. I'm going to pretend it's real. Anyone who calls up and talks about it, we're not going to correct them.
I told you, I feel for Borges on this one. Again, and look, he made a colossal mistake. What do you want me to say? I mean, he got duped by somebody. I still want to know what kind of jackass sits around on his couch and decides, yeah, I'm going to pretend to be a source and get Felge to screw up a story. Seriously, though.
Your callers.
Who does that? I mean, No. 99.9% of our callers don't do that, Jimmy.
Patriots fans who hate Ron Borges, who hate us because we're negative on the Patriots.
So what? You take some solace in like being able to trick a guy and get him suspended from his job?
People do.
Yeah. Have you been tricked? Have we been tricked?
Probably. Somewhere along the line. I know I have. I mean, not to that degree.
No. I've been bad. I've been fed bad juju. I've been fed bad info.
So have I.
But not.
I got tripped up by fake Darren Drager. Let's not forget.
And if Calgary's going to pay him $7-8 million a year, what, Murray? What?
According to Drager, Johnny Gaudreau is a Bruin. There you go, Jimmy. You're right. You were just waiting for that one. You viper.
But listen, it can happen to any of us. It's happened to every one of us. Hell, this is hardly new material.
But come on,
new territory.
The caller's the bad guy here, though. He should have checked his sources.
No, he's part of the bad guy. Yeah, he's part of it. He is. What joy do you get in getting your rocks off being able to dupe someone like that to just screw with them?
That's kind of funny.
Okay, but really? I'm supposed to think that that's funny? If he loses his job over it, is it funny?
No, I don't think he's getting suspended. I don't think he's going to lose his job. That would suck if he lost his job. But I mean, this is what we live in. People are obsessed about, you know, the teams around here, and people take the media part of it a little too seriously at times. Just look at some of the commentary on Twitter. I'm not surprised that this happened.
I mean, the fact of the matter is that we are all vulnerable. If someone really wants to put a scheme together to get you, they'll do it. They will. They'll do it. And this is not the first time it happened years ago, and this goes way back. There was a similar story that said the Red Sox had signed Kirby Puckett when he was playing with the Twins, and the whole thing was fabricated by a fan who had reserved a hotel room in the Four Seasons in the name of Kirby Puckett, leaked it to the media, and I think John Dennis, it was, went on the air with it. Right? Same type of crap.
It would fare thee well not to talk about that, Tony, Anthony.
Look what I did. I got them to report something fake. Yay. Look what I did. You loser. You're a loser.
Of course the kid's a loser.
I know. I'm just expressing it. Because I think that's the other half of the story. Because all the Patriots fans want to beat the crap out of Borges. And look, he screwed up. Okay? Colossal mistake. What do you want? I'm not going to defend it. He's not going to defend it. He knows he screwed up. But the other half of it? Oh, God, come on. Is that what it is now? That's what we're going to do? We're going to just try to set people up and screw them so they lose their jobs? Fabulous. That's great. I love that. That makes me feel good.
Do you have another example back there, Jimmy? You're dying to play?
According to Joel Sherman of the New York Post, the Red Sox and Carlos Ruiz have agreed to a 2-year, $20 million contract with a $12 million third-year mutual option. The Rockies were apparently in the mix. They were close. But they could not up their money.
See, I'm not shocked by this.
Well, raise my rent.
Right, you're gonna
gonna break in again.
Do it.
Been duped.
Uh-oh.
Duped by a fraudulent Joel Sherman Twitter account.
So hold on. Run it, Jimmy.
Run it again.
Hit it again. Hit it.
We have unbreaking news.
Boston's home for sports. This is Breaking News, powered by Valvoline Instant Oil Change on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
How embarrassing. How embarrassing. The Red Sox have not signed Carlos Ruiz. Joel Sherman not reporting that he has signed a 2-year, $20 million deal.
Yeah, so...
I like that unbreaking news.
Yeah, unbreaking news.
I know. I'm reacting very personally to this because, again, I've been on that side of it. So now we're going to F with the media and see if we can get them to screw stuff up. Fabulous. Excellent. No, that's good. I'm going to start doing that in my job, too. Just to F with people, see if I can get them fired. Terrific. That makes me feel good.
To me, that's still the biggest crime. It was a great column. I love the thing.
Felger and Maz. The Sports Hub. Felger and Maz are on your phone with the radio.com app.
Get off the internet!
From 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Smith in motion left against the man coverage. Foles drops back, settles in the pocket. He lost one to the end zone left for Jeffrey. He leaps and he makes the catch in the back of the end zone for a touchdown, Philadelphia!
You have to get Rowe out of this game. Malcolm Butler, two straight series, not out there on the field. But they are picking on Eric Rowe. Dude, Foles didn't even read this. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He hits, and he's got the tall receiver out there, and he's just going to throw it up to him.
Chris Casper from the Boston Globe joining us in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Is that still your lead takeaway from that game, Chris?
My lead takeaway is that Bill's philosophy caught up to him, and that philosophy is that they would rather have players who are not as physically talented but are basically beholden to Bill, beholden to the team, and will just execute whatever the defense is, than people who are more physically talented and might push back a little bit, might freelance a little bit. And it caught up to them because they were in a situation in that game where they were playing a lot of man coverages, you know, whether it's cover one or cover one robber or, you know, two man, whatever it is, and their guys weren't good enough. They couldn't match up. You know, Patrick Chung in the slot trying to cover Alshon Jeffrey, bad, not going to work. Johnson Badamosi in the slot trying to cover Nelson Aguilar, bad, not going to work. Corey Clement down the field against Marquise Flowers, career special teams guy, not going to work. They got exposed, and it's really kudos to the coaching staff for what they were able to do this year to mask those deficiencies. But I also think that there was a little bit of hubris there to think that they could go into this game, bench Malcolm Butler, give 60 snaps combined to Flowers, Jordan Richards, Eric Lee, Badamosi, and win the Super Bowl. You know, I think that caught up to him. It wasn't, you know, it's easy for us to say, oh, they were outcoached. And I'm not even sure that's true. I mean, you can certainly look at it and say, geez, why wouldn't you put Butler in? Guys were lined up properly. Guys were in position. They got beat. This was like schoolyard. Like, your guys aren't good enough.
So, Chris, when you say Bill's philosophy, what you're really saying is system over talent.
Well, you know, it's funny. I went back and looked at some notes from the Jamie Collins trade, and there was somebody who told me, you know, regarding that trade that, you know, in our system, our guys would rather see you do what you were coached to do and be a little less athletic than be more athletic and see you do things that are outside of the system. And I really do think that's true, and I think it caught up to them. I do.
So, but what does that have to do with Butler? Like what? Like how do you tie so that?
Sure.
So that's independent of Butler.
I don't think it is, because I think that Butler is somebody who is more physically talented than those guys. But one of the, again, if we are to believe Bill, strictly a football decision. I think they had problems with him all year, not playing the technique the way they wanted it played, playing the ball instead of playing the man and stuff like that. And I think they lost confidence in him.
As Bedard said, peeking into the backfield, right?
Yeah, because sure. He's trying to make plays to get paid.
Okay, and he definitely did that. So that would tend to, you know, say reduce his role, scale him back, maybe Rowe over Butler. How do you explain the zero snaps? Like, how do you explain now they can't stop anyone?
Yeah.
Eagles scoring 8 of 10 possessions, each of their last 5 possessions. It's clear what you're doing isn't working. Yeah. Why isn't he used as part of some sort of adjustment?
That's a great question, and I don't know. And again, maybe that is the hubris of, well, we have the guys we need because they're just going to execute the defense the way we want it executed, and we're not sure Malcolm will do it. I can't believe that at some point in the second half they didn't just say, we're in the Super Bowl. Forget it. Put him in there. Let's roll the dice. It couldn't be any worse, right? I'm stunned that they never did that. And so that makes me think it's sort of to something that we've talked about before, that I think sometimes in these contract situations, when the season doesn't go well and the guy doesn't perform and maybe he doesn't do what they want to have done, it becomes a little personal for Bill. Totally. You know, it's not all analytical. It's not all just about the facts. It's not all the coaching robot, it's a little personal.
Oh, totally. I mean, stubbornness. Like,
obstinance.
On some level, his relationship with Butler factored in. Whether you want, again, now we can debate percentages, but the history with Butler on some level led him to say, screw this, I'm not playing this guy today. Yeah, he's been freelancing all year long, screwing around, undermining my defense. I don't care if he's going to make a play or not. He's not getting in there. I that's what I believe happened.
Yeah, and I would say this too. You know, look, they have had some success with free agent corners going to the final years of their deal. You know, worked with Asante Samuel, with Aqib Talib, with Darrelle Revis, and I would also put Logan Ryan in that category, even though he's a lesser player than those guys. But also, if you look at the last couple of years, can't you look at and go back to Jamie Collins last year, Butler this year, even Jabal Sheard, that some of these guys, when they get into the last year of their deal and they feel like the team doesn't value them or the team's not going to pay them what they want to be paid, that in the back of their minds, they start to think, well, hold on a second here. Like, this team doesn't really want me. Why should I sacrifice and put everything on the line for this team that doesn't want me? In other words, I feel like Bill maybe needs to factor in the human element a little more to some of these decisions that, okay, you want to carry this guy, you want to bring him into the year, and the contract negotiations have been a little contentious, the guy's looking to get paid, maybe that's not a good idea anymore. You know, because I think the human element here plays into it, and you have a guy trying to do too much. I think Butler certainly was resentful of the team and resentful of Stephon Gilmore earlier in the year. And that's not good. It's not good for him. It's not good for the team.
What do you make of the McDaniel situation?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting and fascinating. And to me, it just sort of goes to the whole theme of the system, the whole theme of the season, I should say, which is that what Tom wants, Tom gets. I think when you look at the season, the takeaway is that, I don't want to say Tom Brady runs the organization because that's a little strong, but that he has tremendous influence in this organization. And I think that's somebody he wanted to stick around.
You think that was the prime motivator there for him?
I do.
Really?
I do. I mean, that's just my opinion. You know, I don't know anything, but I do think that had a lot to do with it.
Why is that so important to Tom? Is it he just likes the way he calls plays? Or is there anything to, well,
that guy's a buffer.
I was just going to say, yeah. It's reporting to Josh, and it's him and Josh, and it's their fiefdom over here, and it's a way to not have to deal with Bill as much, etc.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of a buffer. They have a very close personal relationship. I think Tom, from a football standpoint, we all know what happened this year in terms of the Wickersham story, but I still think that he and Bill have a great deal of respect for each other. I mean, we've talked about this a million times. That was never like a warm, fuzzy, let's grab a beer relationship. I think it was a tremendous football partnership, and it still is. But his relationship with Josh is different. It's personal.
So
Josh is not only a coach, he's a confidant.
That's more the motivator than McDaniels being here as the next guy?
Well, the thing is, you're already tied to Brady, right? So do you think Tom Brady at 42 or 43 wants to start all over with some coach he's never worked with? Like, even if you bring in Jim Harbaugh, who I love, do you think Tom at 43, 44 wants to start over?
No.
So Tom's the guy moving forward. Bill might retire in a year or two, and Tom's still going to be here at that point. So who does he want to be working with? That's why Josh still has to be here.
So I still have a big question, too, as it pertains to McDaniels, and that is, it feels like it's coming out more and more, Chris, here in the last week that, you know, hey, McDaniels is really the guy that was responsible for Garoppolo, not Bill. And when I say that, there was a line in Boland's story the other day, McDaniels did it once with Garoppolo, now they're asking him to do it again. I feel like I'm being sold something now. Like,
interesting, yeah.
Like that's a justification of the Garoppolo deal. How much did McDaniels really have to do with Garoppolo?
Yeah, I can't answer that question, Tony. I don't know. What I do know is that from my experience covering Josh, he is very good at getting the most out of a quarterback. I mean, I covered that 2008 season with Matt Castle, and, you know, Matty, I love you, mean it, as you would say. But, I mean, you should have given that guy half of the $66 million deal you got from the Chiefs because Josh installed more wide receiver screens and sideways passes and all this stuff that made Castle look outstanding. And when he had Kyle Orton in Denver, he got the most out of him. So when he's had marginal talents, he's been able to play them up. And he is good at developing quarterbacks. I think that's something he's good at. I know people hate the term quarterback whisperer, but he's pretty good. I mean, he will get the most out of somebody. And that has value to any organization. And I would think the Crafts would recognize that as well.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I like football, and I like the Patriots and all of that.
Hold on, I'm not done.
This is Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, let's talk some football here with Chris Gasper and you, Sid and Groton. What do you got for us, Sid?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. What a beautiful week in Boston sports. I want to totally disagree with the three of you, and I want to know what Gasper has to think. I think Bob Kraft, being the businessman that he is his entire life, if push came to shove, would fire Belichick in a New York minute. He may not do it on the 6 o'clock news. He may arrange for a graceful exit, but I don't think he would hesitate at all to pull the trigger. I just want to know what you all think about
that. Would never do it, Sid. Never. He's still scarred by the thought that he let Parcells go, or that event. I mean, history has worked out okay for him, but he still hates the criticism he got that he let that Hall of Fame coach walk out the door. He was not going to let Tom Brady play for another team, and he's not going to fire Bill Belichick under any circumstances. Now, our good buddy Carlton in Norwell called and said, did he effectively fire him? You know, by undermining him on the quarterback thing and not letting Bill do what he wanted to do on the quarterback thing, and now bending over backwards to keep his replacement, did he effectively lay the groundwork for Bill leaving sooner than he normally would have? I think you can make the case for that. But he's not going to fire him. No shot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he'll fire him. I think, if anything, it would be Bill sort of firing the Patriots, basically being like, no, I'm done. Like,
well,
you know, you strip me of my power. It's over.
I should have asked the caller. Do you think he should be fired? I mean,
no,
for this?
No.
Of course not.
Definitely not.
He had a bad night, and he made the Butler thing. You know, that was a bad decision made for the wrong reasons. The only fireable offense is the Garoppolo thing. Not picking up the phone and maximizing that asset. They could be sitting here with the fourth overall pick. If all he does is pick up the phone from Cleveland and take that Houston first rounder, they're sitting here with the number fourth pick. That is one that you will never let Garoppolo go. I will never let that go. Because you could have traded Garoppolo in that scenario and still be sitting here with a chance to easily reload the quarterback position with all those guys at the draft, and you're sitting there in the top five. All they had to do was pick up the phone from Cleveland.
Do you have some names on those guys in the draft?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so.
That's why I rely on guys like you. Baker Mayfield. The kid from Wyoming is my favorite.
Josh Allen?
Oh, Allen.
Oh, that kid's a train wreck waiting to happen.
Really?
Yeah.
I watched him for about...
He's Kyle Bowler 2.0.
Listen,
oh, God.
Listen,
he looks the part, but yeah. He's very inconsistent.
He had a good senior bowl. That's what Felger saw.
He's
now
very
he's
inconsistent, and he looks like he should be amazing, and when he's on, he is. But, man, he is. You covered Bill. You know, the two most important things, accuracy and decision-making. That kid is wildly inconsistent with both of those. One moment, he looks like John Elway. The next moment, you're like, oh, my God, is that Bryce Petty out there?
This is your problem. You know too much.
You got Ryan Mallett.
I watched him for two snaps at the senior bowl.
Oh, okay.
And was sold.
I want the kid from Richmond.
See, but that's where you're going to get thrown off with the senior bowl, because that's like a college all-star game. And that level of play, that level of speed and athleticism as a Wisconsin fan, you're not used to seeing that. So you get thrown off like right away.
All I'm saying, buddy boy, is that if you know, he's not getting fired for anything. But to me, that was egregious. And again, the you know, so he had a bad game plan or he had some bad coaching moves, that happens. Why did he sit Butler the whole game like that? If I were the owner, I'd be looking at Bill and saying, you know, why are you making some of these decisions? What where's your head at, your heart at? You know, what's your motivation for some of these reasons? And I don't think they've been good, but you don't fire that guy.
No, the talk of firing him is ridiculous, but a stern talking to? Well, he deserved that. Maybe that's what happened at Davio's earlier this week.
That ain't going to work either. You think Belichick allows himself to be talked to?
Well, he should have been after the way he handled Garoppolo and what the return was and not playing Malcolm Butler. Yeah. And the owner's certainly well within his right to do so.
Tony and Stoneham. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Here's what happened. Belichick wanted to trade Brady because that's what he does. He trades players while they still have some good in them. He got that got shot down, so he then traded Garoppolo. He then sat Butler, and he didn't tell the owner that he was sitting Butler. And I lay this all on Belichick. And he plotted this.
Okay, but listen.
I don't think he intentionally tried to lose the Super Bowl.
Of course not. He thought he could win without him.
Yeah, exactly. But that's hubris. That's not,
agreed.
You know, you're not undermining the team, right? You're not intentionally trying to undermine what you've built.
It's arrogance. And when I say arrogance, it's not like... It's not like he walks into the restaurant like he owns the place. I don't mean that kind of arrogance.
No, it's you think you're better than you are.
It's belief in yourself, almost to a fault.
The arrogance of the Patriot way and how good we are versus how you're not ready to beat us and that sort of thing. And I agree. He absolutely wanted to win, but he absolutely wanted to win it on his terms. And he thought he could win it on his terms, and he almost did. I mean, he usually does. Let's face it.
He overplayed his hand, totally.
John in the car. Go ahead, John. What do you got?
How you doing? I just want to make a couple points. So one of the things that I had noticed is, just like what Chris had touched on, the time has finally run out. I think with the diluted talent over the years, we've gotten away with the next man up. So if someone goes down, another one steps in. And this has come to fruition right now where it has caught up to him. And
okay.
Secondly...
Hey, John, can I just stop you there? Because that's just the question I want to hit Chris on. And
yeah.
Thank you for the call. I'm sort of to hang up. But has the next man up philosophy worn thin?
I think it has. I think when you take it too far, when it becomes, because Next Man Up was something that came about because of injuries. I think some of these guys, it's injury related, but it's also like, okay, you know, you're not going to play it exactly the way we want you to play it. You're not going to listen to everything. I think, again, I've said this before, I'll say again, Bill likes these guys to be kind of beholden to him a little bit. Like, I found you. I put you on the stage. I think that's the way he felt about Butler and why he kind of resented the fact that Butler didn't just take his deal. Like, we discovered you. You were nobody and nothing here on a tryout thing. And look what we did. You know, we put you in Super Bowl 49 and you made the play, but it's a play you messed up in practice. I had to stop you on it and we had to do it again and tell you. You know, and so I think in his mind, he likes that. And I think he's taken that philosophy a little bit too far. And when you're out there with marginal guys, ordinary guys, career special teams type guys, at some point it catches up to you. Unfortunately for the Patriots, it caught up to them in the Super Bowl. And there were extenuating factors, too. Look, you know, I think they'd be better if Chandler Jones was still here, if Jamie Collins was still here. But I get it. You're not going to have all those guys. Hightower gets hurt, Ninkovich retires, all those things happen, and suddenly you have a strip-mine defense. And it definitely showed in the Super Bowl, because you're talking about one of the greatest defensive coaches of all time. And this, to me, is the second time, and I'll put Super Bowl 46 up there, too. The second time where really, due to personnel, no matter how smart Bill is, he was powerless to stop the other team. Because when I go back to Super Bowl 40, the thing that resonates for me is the greatest defensive coach of all time telling his team, let these guys score so we can get the ball back. That's our only chance to win the game in Super Bowl 46. And this was kind of the same thing. No matter what they drew up or what they did, the guys weren't good enough. You know, it's like you can't hand Bill Foxborough High and say, oh, he's going to win the Super Bowl. I think that's where it gets taken too far. Among the patriotologists here, you know, Bill and Brady and the whole debate, it's like people act like you can just give him some guys from the CFL and he's going to go win the Super Bowl. No, it's the NFL. Like, he needs to have the proper talent. He'll coach him up. But as we saw, there's a limit.
See, that whole I made you, that mentality of I made you, you owe me, is I feel what he did to Welker. Like, I feel it was the same thing with Welker. And the whole next man up thing, that only works if you have cornerstones in your defense. You can sub out the role players all you want. Who is the cornerstone on this defense?
Was it Hightower? McCourty?
Right. Yeah. So Hightower was out.
And I just say quickly, their safeties, McCourty and Harmon, I thought picked a bad day to have bad games. Harmon did not tackle well. And I thought a couple of plays where Devin would normally be there in coverage, including the game-winning one, he just wasn't there.
I mean, you know, so I just look at that and I say that there is no cornerstone. Who's the cornerstone of the front seven?
Trey Flowers. Trey Flowers is really good.
Yeah, it's still early for that.
He's a good
though.
Player.
But again, did
he's legit.
Okay, but again, did you look at him as taking over the Super Bowl?
Well, that's a really good offensive line, and if they can focus in on him, like who else was going to help him rush the pass?
I don't think they have one.
James Harrison was the guy in this game, which tells you about the talent drain that guy comes in and is your second most effective guy up front in the Super Bowl. Probably.
I mean, typically when you looked around their defense, you got one guy here, you got another guy there, this guy there, that guy there. Okay, fine, we're covered everywhere, so that if we have an injury in the middle somewhere, we still have enough talent out there where we can piece it together. Too much. They lost too many players.
Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
We want to appeal to your ears.
Blood force drama.
We're going to run it right down their throat.
This is Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The one thing that you did see is I think Isaiah Thomas, obviously, he wasn't healthy. That was probably it. More than anything, he will in 6 months be Isaiah Thomas that we saw last year. But more importantly, we can't wait for him either.
Exactly.
So it's like we just couldn't wait for him. They could not wait for him. That's what the Cleveland Cavaliers said. Not the fact that he couldn't do it.
But it wasn't a good fit either. His agent even said, look, Isaiah's a ball-dominant guy, and the ball in Cleveland is in LeBron James' hands.
So was Kyrie.
Where's Kyrie now?
Him and Kyrie are two different players. But, Ernie, they wasn't going to re-sign him anyway. They wasn't going to give him $200 million. So to be able to go out and get Jordan –
Clarkson.
And Larry Nance Jr., that's a win-win. They wasn't going to re-sign him over the summer no matter what.
And if he was himself.
And the Lakers aren't either.
But if he was himself. Different look.
No, Kenny.
We look at Paul George in Oklahoma at the beginning of the season where he is now. It takes time to fit into what they're doing.
I mean, I feel for Isaiah a little bit. You know, the situation he went in from being an MVP candidate type player here last season to being traded twice in less than a year, and really at this point sort of basically being discarded by the Cavaliers, and it puts him in a tough spot to get paid. So I feel badly for Isaiah in that regard. And I think it just speaks to the desperation of the Cavaliers. I mean, there's fewer than 30 games left in the year. You're shaking up your roster to that degree. And look, it needed to be shaken up, but this is it, man. I mean, they're desperate. They're desperate to make that team work. They're desperate to make it a contender. They're desperate to make a pitch to try and keep LeBron. They hope that these guys will appease him, and that's what it's all about there.
Celtics-Cavs, seven-game series starting tonight. Who do you got?
Celtics.
It stuns me how many basketball people continue to say Cavs, though. Again, last night on the NBC Sports Boston pregame show, Scal said Cavs over Celtics right now. And in a seven-game series with Toronto, if Game 7's in Toronto, he takes Toronto.
Well, I think a lot of that's about respect for LeBron. People are assuming that Kevin Love will come back and that they'll be able to find a way to sort of piece this thing together and put it together. And they added some guys that address some areas of need. I mean, they're 29th in the NBA in defensive rating. They've been dreadful defensively, and George Hill's a good defender. You know, they're younger and they're more athletic. The guys they brought in, the average age is 26 and a half. So they will be a younger team, a more athletic team. That will help, but you also have to have some chemistry there, and they couldn't build it with the guys they had before they retooled their team at the deadline, so who's to say they can build the chemistry in 29 games? That's my whole thing. I mean, even though the roster's better, the other thing is they don't practice. I mean, that was Isaiah's whole thing. Well, they don't practice. You know, they don't practice out here, and that's because of LeBron. It's the wear and tear on LeBron. He doesn't want to practice. So if your superstar doesn't want to practice, and you ship out six guys and bring four new guys in, then how are you going to establish consistency and continuity there if the superstar never wants to practice with these guys?
Probably because they're younger guys and they'll be more apt to be in lockstep about, you know, with what LeBron is doing rather than multi overrated guys who think they're superstars like Isaiah Thomas.
No, they'll follow orders, Murray. Yeah. They will. The young guys out there will follow orders now because they don't have the cachet to challenge LeBron. How many organizations is he going to leave in his wake?
Well, two so far. Three. Well,
it'll be three.
I mean, you know what I mean.
I mean, but the Cavs twice, and Miami, he pretty much left that one in ruin when he left. It's like, you know, I'm astonished that, and I understand the talent, but he leverages teams and holds them hostage with his talent. And it you know what? I'm telling you, you know who the smartest guy in the NBA is over the last year? Kyrie Irving. Got out of Dodge he got out of Rome before LeBron lit the match. Smart. He saw it coming. He knew it was going to be a disaster. He'd get out of there. All right, smartest guy in the league, as far as I'm concerned.
But speaking, I mean, of disasters, how disastrous does the deal now look from the Cleveland standpoint? I mean, you know, Jay Crowder's out of there. Isaiah Thomas is out of there. You traded Kyrie Irving to the Celtics and made them a legitimate championship contender. And now you had to do a deal with the Lakers that, while it helps you in the short term, also creates the cap space for them to make a real run at LeBron and Paul George. It was your only choice. So think about that.
So it's an agenda-free Friday. A lot of Patriots fallout still, but we've hit on Bruins a lot today. Some Celtics right here. And how about Alan in Florida with the Red Sox thought? Let's just mix it up. Alan, what do you got?
Well, first, before I do, I just wanted to ask Chris one question. I don't know, Matt, what you think, but Chris, as a writer for the Globe, I think Ron Borges should be fired. I think he shows what a bias he's had for years, a hatred, if you want to use that strong word. And I think it's a disgrace. And, you know, naturally he wrote for the Herald because he was once for the Globe. So to me, I know you're not going to like it, Mike, but that was a demotion. But anyway, what I want to get onto is, you know, we do have a baseball team. And if it's true that the Red Sox are offering 5 years at 125 and they don't take it, you know, Scott Boras, everyone thinks he's such a genius. I don't know if you guys remember back, he screwed Jason Veritek out of a lot of money. So I could see the same thing happening with J.D. Martinez, because I think that I'm not a Dombrowski fan. As a matter of fact, I can't stand him. But that is an awfully fair market offer. And I don't think, I mean, they're bidding against themselves, maybe against Arizona.
Well, Alan, aren't you almost proud of Dombrowski and the Red Sox and baseball for not giving in to Boras?
Like, yes.
Finally, for once, they all saying, Scott, no. It's not worth it. The market's not there. And we're not going to bid against ourselves. We're not going to bid against fantasy teams or mystery teams. We're not taking your bullcrap. And is that collusion? Maybe on some level. But I'm with the owners on this one. It's gotten goofy in baseball, especially when the sport feels like it's trending down. And so J.D. Martinez goes on that contract drive, and now he wants to be paid like, what? No, good for the Red Sox. I'll be pissed if they give in.
Yeah, I understand that part. I'm not a huge JD Martinez guy, but when I look across the landscape of baseball, I think it's pretty disturbing if you're a player. And I actually put the blame on Tony Clark, the executive director of the MLB Players Association. He did a terrible deal. And the reality is baseball now has a salary cap. And that's why it's not like these guys found, you know, fiscal sanity or fiscal religion. They don't want to pay that luxury tax. It's become so onerous that they don't want to do it. And that's what's happened. They basically have a de facto salary cap. And that's why you're not seeing these guys signed. It has nothing to do with Boris or you know, they've all figured out, oh, long-term contracts can be really bad.
No.
It's the luxury tax, because that's real money that comes out of the bottom line.
Okay. So poor J.D. Martinez is going to have to settle for $20 million a year after hitting more than 30 home runs twice in his life, and he's 31 years old.
I know the horror of it all.
Oh, God, my heart bleeds.
Well, the other thing is that...
Thoughts and prayers to J.D. Martinez and his family.
I don't like J.D. I don't want him here. I don't care whether he signs or not. I'm talking globally about baseball, because it's not just J.D. Martinez. As we're wont to do, we've turned this into a provincial, parochial issue, like just J.D. Martinez. The fact is, across baseball, like, none of these guys
have signed. There's 130 guys still
out there. Jake Arrieta still... Yu Darvish hasn't. All these guys are still out there.
No. Didn't Darvish go to the Brewers? No. Oh, he didn't.
No, he's still out there.
Why am I saying that? That's right. He's still out there.
Yeah. That was a dream you had.
Yeah. No. They were involved.
I know.
Damn.
Well, no. And the draft compensation's another factor.
That's a great point, Matt.
So you got these guys out there. You know, now there's less willingness to sign these guys and forfeit draft picks. And you know, there is a luxury. I'm telling you, the economic system needs a massive overhaul.
It got massive. It in favor of the owners. No. They got a massive overhaul. They won.
So it's fine to have a cap. They need a floor, is what they need, Chris.
Wow.
Because you got a lot of these smaller market teams looking at the Astros and the Cubs, for that matter, and say they suck for 2 or 3 years. They got Chris Bryant. They got Carlos Correa. They got Jose Altuve. They built it from the ground up, and now look at them. They're going to be good for 5 years. I'm going to do it the same way. My fan base will tolerate it in the process, and I can pocket the money from revenue sharing while I'm doing it because the big market teams are going to pay me. I mean, like, to me... The problem is that the bad teams say, what am I going to go spend money for? I'll suck. It's only going
to
hurt me.
You know what's interesting to me about it, though? It's like, if you tank in baseball, it's okay. But when NBA team, when the Sixers tank, it's like a crime against humanity. And I've been saying that for a while, because nobody tanked harder than the Houston Astros. And it worked out for them. And what the Marlins are doing with Derek Jeter is a disgrace. And I think it's disgraceful that the commissioner is allowing it to happen, and that he got all upset at Dan Le Batard when Le Batard basically, you know, read him the facts of what was happening. And, you know, he got all indignant about that. I think it's embarrassing that that happens. And I wonder why in Major League Baseball, when teams do it, it's okay. But when it happens in the NBA, everybody looks at it and says, oh, there's something wrong with this. There's something wrong with this league.
Okay, because people don't care about baseball anymore.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.